The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Greenberg. I'm joined today by Judge Allen and Judge Meredith. We are convened via video conference to hear the argument in Stover against the Secretary. Will counsel, beginning with the appellant's counsel, enter your appearances, please?
Good morning, Zachary Stoltz. On behalf of Mr. Stover, joining me today is Amy Odom. We're with Chisholm, Chisholm, and Kilpatrick.
Counsel for the Secretary.
Good morning. This is Mark Fitchich. On behalf of the Secretary, with me today is Megan Krall, Deputy Chief Counsel of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Very well. Let's proceed. I understand the counsel for the appellant wishes to reserve time. How much?
10 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Judge Greenberg, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The board was wrong to find Mr. Stover did not serve near the perimeter because the totality of the evidence demonstrates he did. Buddy statements, photographs, and even Mr. Stover's testimony gave adjudicators both objective evidence and a credible picture that he served near the perimeter based on the ordinary meaning of those terms. The board's decision should be vacated and the appeal remanded, with an instruction for the board to determine whether the totality of credible evidence demonstrates that Mr. Stover was otherwise near the Tak Lee Air Force Base in Thailand during the year he served there.
Sorry to interrupt. I thought I read somewhere in your brief that you wished for a reversal. Have you changed your position?
We did, Your Honor. We argued in the alternative for remand, and in preparing for this oral argument and in reading the Secretary's additional pleadings, it became clear that remand is the remedy that we would seek today, given the findings that the Board of Veterans Appeals has not yet made in the first instance.
So is your position that we are without power to reverse, or it's just a more prudent remedy to remand in view of, I presume, your client's advanced age?
Not at all, Your Honor. This court absolutely has the power to reverse the board, and the board has made several findings that we challenged in the pleadings, and we continue to challenge those. Of course, the court has power to reverse the board's decision. That would of course, be better. But in light of all the pleadings and all the papers filed in this case, it seemed more appropriate to argue for remand at this point in time.
I understand. Go ahead.
The board should use the ordinary meaning found in the M21 provision, and the Secretary's offered definition of near, which he defines as close enough to physically touch the perimeter structure, is arbitrary, overly restrictive, and makes limited sense in the context of the M21 provision. The court should read the M21 and command the board to read the M21 as it is meant to be read using the other ordinary meaning of otherwise near. Mr. Stover, to recount some of the evidence, has shown at least once a month he had to do work at the end of a runway, maybe 20 or 30 feet from the perimeter fence. His sleeping quarters, hooch number 599, with no windows, he submitted a picture, was near the perimeter, which is found at page 314 of the record. A buddy statement credibly places Mr. Stover only feet from the perimeter for some events. And the board did not adequately account for this, noting only that the veteran who described how near Mr. Stover was to the perimeter could not identify Agent Orange, and claiming incorrectly that Mr. Stover's hooch was not evidence of his duties. Neither the board nor the Secretary provided any reason why walking along the perimeter as a security policeman was so different from sleeping or working next to it, such that the M21 was clearly intended only to concede herbicide exposure in the former case, but not the latter ones.
Mr. Stover, could I ask you a question? And I'll ask your opposing counsel as well, but you both see many more of these cases certainly than I do. But what struck me is I've seen my fair share of Thailand cases. And what struck me is I've never seen a position from the board or the secretary like the one advanced in this case. In fact, I've seen dramatically the opposite, remands because the board didn't sufficiently explain why somebody wasn't near, for example. Are you aware of any other case in which either the board has ruled or the secretary has taken the position that is at least relatively close to the one taken here in Stover?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, well, we looked. We couldn't find anything, and I just wanted to make sure that I hadn't missed anything. So thanks.
Along those lines, Your Honor, we would ask that the relief in this case be to instruct the board clearly that the M21 does apply to the case, direct the board that it may not use that overly restrictive definition advanced for the first time in this case of near as contrary to the plain meaning of the term, and order the board to re-adjudicate the claim based on all credible evidence of the veteran's locations, including his sleeping quarters. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Just for the sake of the broader audience, the hooch is the sleeping quarters. Is that correct?
I apologize, Your Honor. Yes, that is his sleeping quarters. That's the terminology used for the sleeping quarters, and evidence of where those were are submitted and found in the record.
Well, we've, of course, read your submissions, and we're prepared to listen further for argument. But my congratulations on making your point succinctly and directly. I'll turn this over to my colleagues if you've got any questions. Judge Allen, anything further for counsel at this point?
I just had one a question or a thought, I guess. I was reading this morning and preparing for this the hearing transcript before the board. And what struck me was whether there's an additional issue here, and I wanted to just get your reaction, Mr. Stoltz, in the sense that I couldn't come away from reading that transcript with any sense that I would be required as a veteran to submit evidence to meet this standard now. In other words, there was no discussion from the board member with respect to saying, well, you got to make sure you give me evidence that shows you can basically sit on the perimeter fence. Is there a problem there, whether we call it a Bryant problem or we call it a Smith problem, in terms of sort of lulling somebody into a sense of security that they've got the evidence in there that they need?
Yes, Your Honor, I had a similar thought in preparing for the argument. It was very short. The board member thanked the veteran for his testimony, never questioned his credibility, never cross-examined him, never said anything else. I do believe there is an issue with that, with the board member's hearing in this case.
All right, thank you. That's all I had, Judge Greenberg.
Thank you, Judge Allen. Just, Mr. Stoltz, to pursue that a moment, that would come under the category of the statutory requirement of the duty to assist, would it not?
Yes, Your Honor, the statutory and regulatory requirements also for a hearing, yes.
All right. Judge Meredith, anything for counsel at this time?
I do, thank you. So a moment ago, you asked us to apply the ordinary meaning canon to interpret the language in the manual. And I refer you back to the court's opinion in Withers, where the court essentially declined to assign a meaning to the word sedentary employment, because those words weren't found in a legal instrument that had any independent legal significance. And so could you explain to us your understanding of the manual provision at issue here? Is it a legal instrument that has, in the words of Withers, that establishes or defines specific rights or entitlements such that we can use those canons to interpret it, or should?
The M21 is an interesting creation. It exists, as Your Honor, I'm sure, knows, to help adjudicators. It's a step-by-step guide, and it controls RO adjudications, and so it does have legal significance. So it is a legal instrument, to answer Your Honor's question, I hope. Whether that should trigger a statutory and regulatory canon of construction is a different question, and I don't think that the court necessarily needs to reach that particular question today, because the ordinary meaning controls so plainly here because of the way the M21 is constructed in its entirety and the purpose behind the M21. But it is a legal instrument, to answer Your Honor's question. I just don't think that I would not advocate that it would be appropriate to go through the contortions of a jusdem generis when there is no reason to, and that is really not the point of the M21.
So I was just would point out in Withers, the parties had asked us to apply the ordinary meaning canon, and the court declined to do so, finding that it wasn't the words you weren't used in a legal instrument. But that aside, so even if it's not appropriate for the court to assign a definition to the words at or near, which was used by the board, should the board have done so in this case? And do you read the board decision as having assigned any specific meaning to that phrase that they used, at or near the perimeter?
I do not. I do not believe that the board assigned a specific meaning. In fact, in reading the board's decision, it was a little all over the place insofar as saying, you know, he submitted some photographs that seemed to be near the perimeter. And then it turned around in the next two or three pages and questioned his credibility. So no, Your Honor, I do not believe that the Board of Veterans Appeals did truly define those terms, which is one reason why today I'm advocating that Mr. Stover is advocating that when the board, that if the court were to reverse a remand, it should give clear instruction for the board to not adopt the secretary's definition, which now the secretary is on record as adopting as being capable of touch. And so the secretary today, to Your Honor's point, is the one advancing a definition that is not found in the M21 or in the board's decision.
So, and this may be why you changed your strategy as to the remedy here, but in my view, it doesn't appear that we have, as you just said, a board decision that set forth a definition of what near means. And under our line of cases, Johnson and similar cases, may have had an obligation to define a subjective term that they were using to deny the claim. In the absence of having done that, and as you pointed out, making the factual findings as to how close the flight line was, how close the living quarters were, how close the runway was to the perimeter, is it ripe for our review yet as to whether the board applied the proper standard for near?
The court has the power to define the terms and to command the board what it should do. The lack of the board's definition would make the court's review of that difficult. Whether it is ripe is a question for the court. I would say that enough has been pled and enough is in the board decision for the court to reject the secretary's definition as overly restrictive. But due to the board's lack of definitions and lack of explanation, I would answer, Your Honor, that it would be a tough call for it to be right today.
Judge Meredith, could I just ask a follow-up on that?
Absolutely.
So Mr. Stoltz, I just want to make sure I understand 100%, because what you just said is what I understood you to be coming out of the gates with, which is your position is we clearly leave aside that we can do what we think is right or whatever, but that we could say that near is something different than on. So the position in this case advanced on appeal is not right, that the board has adopted this rule of near in the context of this case, whether it would be binding on it or not in another case. They've done it here. And the decision here simply is as to near, other than being able to say it's not the same thing as on, you didn't make any findings here, either factual findings about how far away these things were or what you understood near to be, so that you could compare those things. And so on remand, you got to do that. Is that basically what you're saying, is that we can reject the secretary's position, but we can't really say that these things were near because the board didn't tell us what it understood the term to be. And even if it had done that, it didn't tell us how far away these things were. Is that a summary of what you said?
That is a very fair summary, Your Honor. If I could add that in the remedy that we seek, another problem that another error in the board's decision is not taking the veteran's totality of circumstances, the totality of his service, the totality of the evidence submitted into account. That would be another problem with the board.
I was not trying to pigeonhole you on just that one point about the meaning of the M21 and NEAR. I mean, I think that there are tons of problems with this board decision. But I just wanted to make sure I had that in the follow-up to Judge Meredith's question. And thank you, Judge Meredith, for letting me jump in on that. So,
yep. Yes, Your Honor, and thank you.
Just one more follow-up in line with what you had just discussed with Judge Allen. If you're asking us to reject the interpretation of NEAR that the Secretary has put forth in his brief, and so even assuming we can interpret and should interpret a manual provision, and that it's right for our review, do we owe any deference to the proposed definition that VA has put forth here?
No. No, Your Honor, you do not owe the Secretary deference. It's being advanced in a litigation position, for one. In another, it frankly makes little to no sense in the context of the M21 to so narrowly restrict such a term. The M21 is meant to help adjudicators in a step-by-step, easy way is the idea of it, to adjudicate the decisions. And so, no, the Secretary should get no deference to defining these terms.
Well, do you agree with the proposition that deference should only be required when we're talking about the expertise of the Secretary? NEAR or AT doesn't require any expertise.
Yes, Your Honor.
So we don't owe any deference to the Secretary on the question of distance.
I agree with Your Honor's point. Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Anything more, Judge Allen, at this point? Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stolz.
Thank you, Your Honor. Have you
concluded?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right,
yes.
Thanks. We'll hear from the Secretary.
Thank you, Judge Greenberg. Again, this is Mark Fitchich on behalf of the Secretary. The Secretary is asking the court to affirm the board's decision for one of two reasons. First, we are asking the court to find that the board properly applied the Veterans Benefits Administration Thailand policy as found in the M21. Second, in the alternative, if the court finds that the board misapplied that policy, we're asking the court to find that to affirm the board's decision anyway, because this non-binding policy does not create a judicially enforceable right. So I want to first talk about the language in the policy and how the board interpreted that. As Mr. Stolz explained, we interpret the words near to mean that the service member had to have been close enough to the physical structure of the base perimeter to touch it. And we get there from three ways. Number one, the policy itself is limited to on or near the perimeter as opposed to other parts of the base. This means that the flight line, the living quarters, and so on do not qualify as near the perimeter. Number two, the examples of occupations in the M21 are limited to security personnel, which are the types of personnel that would have regular repeated contact with the base perimeter. And number three, we point to the May 2009 memorandum for the record issued by what is now the Director of Compensation, which explained that the reason those occupations were cited as examples was because they were the ones that were known to have contact with, end quote, the base perimeter. And the board properly understood that this policy was meant to cover only those who had this repeated close contact with the base perimeter. We want to emphasize one point. This is not the exclusive way of establishing exposure to herbicides on a fact-found basis. This policy does not supplant COMBI. It does not supplant Section 1138 USC Section 1110. Every single veteran who seeks compensation for exposure to herbicides in Thailand must demonstrate actual exposure. This is just the policy found in the M21 just explains one type of evidence that will satisfy that in-service exposure element, and that is when the person's duties place him or her at the perimeter. But that's not the only way of establishing exposure. Yeah, I want to address a point Judge Meredith made about asking whether this is a legal instrument. We do not see it as a legal instrument, and that's why we don't We assumed in our response to Judge Greenberg's order that it was a regulation, and therefore we asked the court to interpret it as such using the regular tools of statutory and regulatory construction. That's not a post hoc rationalization because it's a pure legal question, assuming that it's a legal question, but we don't view it as a legal question. We don't view the M21 as a creating an enforceable right. It's simply a policy statement that the agency has issued without going through notice and comment rulemaking.
Mr. Bissett, so if I can jump in there, you know, so in the context of, for example, Overton, that might be right. We said in Overton that the board had to discuss relevant M21 provisions as part of its decision making. But this case, it strikes me as different. The board clearly adopted this as the rule of decision in this case, as did the parties apparently in the earlier joint motion for remand. So I'm not sure why, even if we could not interpret the M21 in a context in, I'm going to call it an Overton context, where the board simply didn't discuss a relevant provision. Here, it seems to be very different. The board clearly adopted this as the rule it was trying to employ, right? And so it would seem odd that we would then be without power to essentially interpret whether or not the board was correct in applying the rule that it itself chose to adopt. I'd like your reaction to that.
Well, Your Honor, we would point to the Federal Circuit decision in Farrell versus Department of Interior, which we cited in our brief. And in that case, the National Park Service applied a manual provision incorrectly. That when it got to the Federal Circuit said that the agency failed to follow its own manual provision. They committed an error. So then the next question was, well, what do we do about it? Can we enforce this? Can we require the agency to have correctly followed it? And then they got into the question of, well, it depends on whether it's binding or not. And the court identified several factors that it would consider when determining whether it was binding. And that's the secretary's position here, is that this is not binding on the board. Even if the board misapplied it, it's not the end of the matter.
So let me ask you this. What if the facts here were that Mr. Stover was a security patrol dog handler, okay? And the board said, we recognize he's a security patrol dog handler, but they just didn't do what the M21 said to do. You would then have us affirm that decision just like this, because the M21 is this thing that's out there that's non-binding, even though it binds every single frontline adjudicator. You'd have us affirm that because we wouldn't be able to reach it, because like the Farrell case, it's just an internal manual and so we can't enforce it.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the secretary wants to make one broad point, is that the use of these policy statements or guidance documents is very is prevalent in government. In VA, when Congress created this court and the Veterans Judicial Review Act and required the secretary to put his substantive rules to publish them through the Administrative Procedure Act process, Congress wanted the secretary to act like other agencies, and it wanted this court to treat this agency just as other agencies. So we would, Your Honor, argue that even in that case where the breach was more clear, we would argue that it doesn't matter because it's still not an enforceable remedy.
What do we do with then the Federal Circuit's en banc decision in Nova recently, in which I think it was Nova, there are so many of them, where it sort of backtracked on Gray, et cetera, and said, well, some provisions in the M21 you can challenge directly in the Federal Circuit under 502, right, of the Administrative Procedure Act. That would suggest that at least with respect to those provisions, they might be different, right?
I'm not prepared to answer that question, so I don't want to speculate, but I would just point out that the issue there was a different. That was.
What do you mean? Could I just you don't want to speculate? I'm speculate about what? mean,
well, I
speculate that there's a position the agency has that you don't know.
Well, I've read the case.
No. This seems to be a particularly important thing. You're saying that there is this manual that governs the adjudication of claims for every person that is in the front lines, and that the board can entirely ignore it, and that is entirely immune from judicial review, despite the fact that the Federal Circuit en banc recently said some parts of the M21 are ones that actually can be challenged directly in the Federal Circuit under the Administrative Procedure Act. So there's a tension there that it seems to me you have to be able to answer if you're telling us that nothing in the M21 is something we can enforce or interpret.
We would point out, Your Honor, that even we would point to 20.105, 38 CFR 20.105, which indisputably makes these not binding on the board. And we would just fall back on the case law that says that when authorities are not binding on the agency and the board acts as the agency's final decision maker, they're not enforceable.
The board could adopt, as it clearly did over the course of this time, for Mr. Stover, just Mr. Stover, telling him about the on or near, the joint motion for remand. And then when it comes time for the board to actually render a final decision, it can say equivalent to, we were only kidding. That's not a rule we're going to apply. And that's entirely immune from judicial review, even though the board itself adopted this as the rule of decision it was using.
Well, Your Honor, we wouldn't concede that the board treated this as if it were binding authority. We don't interpret it in that manner.
I didn't say that. I said the board adopted this as its rule of decision. It adopted all of these things because everything it did along the way only makes sense if near is something different than being able to touch the fence, right? Because saying that your living quarters were near the fence, I mean, nobody thought that what Mr. Stover was saying was that he could reach out the window and touch the fence. I mean, you know, nobody was thinking that. And so none of this makes sense unless the rule it adopted, fine, it happens to appear in the M21, but it then has to apply that rule faithfully, it seems to me, in a case in which it's adopted it as its own rule of decision.
Well, Your Honor, we interpret the board's decision as applying this as guidance. But even if we... Forget about
guidance. As guidance to whom?
The board applied this guidance, and that's what it is. It's guidance. It's not a regulation. It's not a statute. It's guidance that instructs adjudicators what sort of evidence will satisfy the exposure element. But again, even if the court disagrees,
but you're saying we can't look at that, right? We can't review what the board did. In other words, I'm having trouble to think about that. You're saying we have to affirm, but we can only affirm if we know the rule the board applied and then say that the board wasn't clearly wrong in reaching its factual conclusions about that rule, right?
Your Honor, the rule is 38 U.S.C. Section 1110, and that's the rule the board applied. The manual provision is just one way to apply 38 U.S.C. Section 1110. And that's what the board found. The board found that Mr. Stover was not actually exposed to an herbicide agent in Thailand. And that, of course, is reviewable. And the secretary is not trying to argue otherwise. What we're arguing is that the board properly made those factual findings. It understood that this manual provision was not intended to instruct a concession of herbicide exposure just for anybody who came in contact with the perimeter sporadically or who was on the flight line, which in some context might be near the perimeter, but when used in the M21, The context is that we're looking at something that's not the flight line, because otherwise the flight line virtually everywhere on base would be near the perimeter. So our position is that the board did properly apply this manual provision. So just our fallback argument is that, well, what if the board didn't apply it? And our position there is that, well, it wouldn't matter because it's not binding anyway. But again, we would just go back to our primary argument, was that the board understood what this provision was supposed to do. It applied it in a way that was consistent with how it was articulated back in May 2009, and is consistent with the terms as found in the manual itself.
Why then has the secretary so often agreed to remand Thailand claims because of the failure of the board to sufficiently explain itself under the M21 provision? I mean, all three of the judges on this panel have had situations in which the secretary has conceded remand. And we have rejected Mr. Stoltz's position, Mr. Stoltz's firm's position. I think they were counsel in almost all of these cases for reversal. So the parties agreed there was a problem in not applying the M21, and we've all remanded for the board to apply it. Why would the secretary have, in all of those other cases, have taken that position if the real position of the secretary is what you're telling me this morning, which is it's non-binding, so it doesn't matter if the board just totally ignores it?
Your Honor, I don't have an answer for that. All I can say is that the regulation is clear. These are not binding on the board. They can provide guidance for the board as to how to apply the law more consistently, but I'm not aware that we would have ever conceded that something that by regulation is not binding is binding.
I'm not saying it's binding. The secretary agreed repeatedly in cases to remand to the board to better discuss the M21 provision. But you're telling us today that we can't review what the board did with the M21 provision, right? I gave you the example that the board could have found that a person was a security police squadron or at the perimeter, and said, but we don't care, that's not sufficient, and we could not review that determination because the M21 isn't binding in the board. That is entirely inconsistent with every other case that I have ever had about Thailand and the position of the secretary.
Well, Your Honor, maybe I can step back a bit. What the board does and regardless of what authority it applies, this court always has the power to reverse factual findings and to find board decisions arbitrary and capricious. So if our position today was was meant to imply that the board's application of the manual could never be at least a factor, step back and rephrase that. In fact, some of the case law we cited in our brief does hold that even if the non-binding authority itself is not create the rule, it's a deviation from that authority, if so extreme, can be a factor to use when finding a decision was arbitrary and capricious. So maybe that might sort of give you the hopefully that sort of clarifies the point. So I just wanted to make that clear. What we are arguing here is, again, just kind of to boil our position down to two points, is that the board did properly apply this. The second point is, well, what if the board didn't? And I think that really gets into the meaning of these terms, on or near. If we were looking at a statute or regulation, we would be going through the regular rules of construction, which we did in our supplemental brief. We don't agree that that would be appropriate here. And I think that's what Judge Meredith might have been getting at, was do we even get into this? Because this is not a regulation, but assuming it is, we put our position down to say this is how we interpret it. But ultimately, our position would be that if the court is struggling with the terms, and as far as, well, the board didn't define these terms and we don't know what they mean, then we would say, well, that is exactly a reason to not enforce it, because as in the Jackson versus Culinary School case we cited, the D.C. Circuit says this policy, that the language is just too murky to create a firm legal standard. So that's kind of where the position we are going with that second argument was that if the court
can
says,
I jump in there? Yes.
I'm so, sorry.
On the point you were just raising. So whether whatever standard the board was applying here, whether it was 1110, whether it was the manual, something else, the board seemed to attribute significance to the fact that that the veteran needed to be at or near the perimeter. And I think you just acknowledged that the board did not define what it meant by that term. Under our line of case law, like Johnson, does the board have an obligation to disclose to the veteran when it uses a subjective term to deny the claim? Does it have an obligation to tell the veteran what it meant by that term? Regardless of whether this comes from the manual, the statute, or regulation, do they not have to tell the veteran what the standard is they're using?
No, and it's precisely because this is not a regulation. If this were a regulation, this would be a completely different case. But this is just a policy that the board applied, and it interpreted as it felt interpreted it, and said on the flight line is not the perimeter.
So the board,
we're not aware of any
whether it came from the statute. You said the board could have used 1110 to deny the claim, the standard under there. They thought at or near was an appropriate standard under 1110. You're saying they still don't have to disclose to the veteran what they meant by that term, and that we in turn can't review whether the board erred in that regard in failing to define a term that they found significant in denying the claim.
Well, Your Honor, I think that because this term is not found in any statute or regulation, it doesn't have legal significance. The issue is whether the veteran had actual exposure, evidence of actual exposure. So the board, when it imported this non-regulatory, non-statutory term, it just looked at that as one way to establish actual exposure. And there's language in its decision that said you were not on or near the perimeter or otherwise exposed. So the board, the ultimate objective, the ultimate factual finding the board made was whether Mr. Stover was exposed to an herbicide agent in service. And it looked at all the evidence. The manual provision is not the exclusive means of establishing actual exposure. And just because the board said that Mr. Stover wasn't on or near the perimeter doesn't mean that the board necessarily rejected all the other evidence that he provided to establish actual exposure. And I wanted to make a point about deference. Mr. Stolz was asked about deference. I'm not aware of any case, and we're not asking for deference. First, I want to make that point clear, because this is not a regulation or a statute, and we simply don't ask for deference. Number two, I'm not aware of any case law that would hold that deference would be appropriate for one of these policy statements that are not published in the Federal Register after notice and comment rulemaking. In fact, the case law says in those situations, when you have, I'll use the word ambiguity, that might be a bit of a term of art, but when you have a policy statement that just isn't clear about the legal standard, then it doesn't create an enforceable right. And so the argument is that, well, the secretary is not entitled to deference. We would argue if the court needs to get there, if the court says, should we defer to the secretary, then that itself says this policy is just not clear enough to create a legal standard in the first place.
What about the our recent case in Andrews, in which we held that the board had adopted the M21 provision with respect to, I think it was hypertension or diabetes. I can't remember which one it was. But we held there that, just like the Federal Circuit in its non-precedential decision in Hudick, so what are you, how does that affect your argument?
I apologize, Judge Allen. You cut out a bit. I know you asked about Andrews and the Hudick case. And can you repeat the question? I want to make sure I heard it. There was some, you cut out and then about in the middle there twice.
I suffered the same thing. I couldn't hear you, Judge Allen, on a couple of those things. I don't know whether Judge Meredith had the same issue. and your picture looks frozen. So I would ask our support team to help us out here. And now Judge Allen has disappeared from the screen.
Your Honor,
we'll take a moment and let the IT people advise us.
Your Honor, this is the clerk. I think Judge Allen has dropped off and he'll click back in. So we should see him join us in just a moment.
All right. Counsel, this won't have any effect on your time. Make whatever points you feel is appropriate.
Judge Greenberg, this is the clerk again. We have an IT tech. Here we go. Yeah.
All right. Mr. Block, are we prepared to continue? Judge Allen, you've returned to us fully.
Yes, I've returned to us. Apparently, the internet at the court is not quite as good as the internet at my house. So. And I'm sorry, Mr. Visage, for that. So.
All right, counsel, proceed. Did you need Judge Allen to repeat the question where some parts of it were not clear?
Correct. I know he wanted me to comment on Andrews and the Hudick decision, but if Judge Allen could kindly repeat the question, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, basically Andrews and Hudick basically saying when if the board adopts an M21 provision as the rule of decision in a particular case, it then becomes the enforceable rule for the case. And I just wanted to get your reaction as to how those decisions, particularly Andrew, since it's precedential, affects this, because all of the issues you're talking about may actually be moot or not moot. They just may not be for this case because the board so clearly adopted this as the rule of decision in this case.
Yeah, understood. The board remanded the case and instructed the regional office to apply certain criteria. It ordered certain development. So what Andrews is essentially Stigall. Once the board, it doesn't matter where the board gets the authority, whether it's the M21 or just something else, but it's the board's remand that gives creates the law of the case, so to speak, rather than the M21. And we don't have that here. We don't have the board remanding to the RO saying this is how we're going to construct the case. So that would be our answer to that, Your Honor.
All right. Judge Meredith, anything further?
No, thank you.
Anything more, Judge Allen, from the government? All right. Counsel, if you've completed your argument, feel free to say so. If you haven't, proceed.
I'll just make very brief points is that we just want to reiterate that these use of non-regulatory guidance documents is prevalent in government, and the secretary does rely on these. More specifically, the Veterans Benefits Administration relies on these. Courts have looked at these before in other contexts, and courts routinely hold that these do not create legal standards. They do not, they're not the law. And that's all the secretary's asking, is to look at those other cases and to treat him like other courts treat other agencies, no better, no worse. But that is all. I hope I answered your questions today. And the secretary thanks the opportunity to present the case.
Thank you very much. We'll now turn back to counsel for the appellant for your rebuttal. Go ahead.
There have to be some legal standards by which to adjudicate Mr. Stover's case. in Mr. Stover's case, there's an M21 provision that does that the board adopted. It is a provision that is supposed to be helping Thailand veterans. I do not understand why the secretary has changed his mind at this juncture. I did not quite understand his point about there being no legal standards to adjudicate this case, but I would urge the court to reject those arguments and ensure that Mr. Stover's case is adjudicated clearly under the guiding M21 provisions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Anything further, Judge Allen? Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Well, counsel have done an excellent job in your written submissions and in your arguments today. We consider the matter submitted. Thank you.
And the court is in recess.